Okay, we're broadcasting live today from An Ghrianon Theatre in Letterkenny. It's got a little bit noisier again because the first session here at the Donegal Giving event, which we talked extensively about the first hour of the show, is over and they're all heading down for a scone. So bear with us if there's a bit of background noise. Now, some of your comments here, a caller says, the waiting times for a driving test in Donegal can be very long. If the system cannot process the existing queue, adding a compulsory deadline for tens of thousands of long-term learners could create an even worse bottleneck. But there's 8,000 tests where people don't turn up at all. So I presume they're hoping that that will service demand. Another, forcing a young person to redo the full process after 4 years just because they couldn't get a test date or failed is a significant financial penalty and very unfair. And another, Greg, the RSA must somehow manage to its backlog and significantly increase its testing capacity before this can be enforced. 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number. Now, I mentioned a happenstance of a meeting between myself and Stephen Devaney at another outside broadcast, and we said we'd have a chat about an event he was planning, and fast forward to today, and here we are. Stephen Devaney, thank you so much for joining me. How are you keeping?
Good morning, Greg. I'm okay, considering, yeah.
Thanks very much for joining us.
No problem.
And this fundraiser comes off the back of a huge loss for you and your family. Talk to me about Julie McCormick Devaney and what happened to her, as much as you're comfortable in talking about it, Stephen.
Yeah, yeah. My wife, Julie McCormick Devaney, she passed away in June. She died on the 5th of June from a very short and aggressive battle with cancer. So she went into the hospital with lung problems. Now, this would have been, my wife had a little, she was an asthmatic and she had an underlying autoimmune problem, you know, so she would get chest infections from time to time and get pneumonia in the worst case scenario. So we didn't really, we thought she'd go into hospital, but as it transpired, she had pancreatic cancer that had spread to her lungs, that more or less by the time we found it was there, she had, as the doctors gave her, 4 weeks to live.
And there were sort of potentially, I suppose, in hindsight, little indicators, but nothing that could have prepared you for that diagnosis.
Hindsight's a great thing, and looking back on it, the earliest that I could say that there was any sort of signs that there was anything different about it is Christmas, no earlier than Christmas. Offer, you know, maybe a glass of wine, no, I don't want that, and not off, you know, not eating, sort of these type of things, and complaining, getting out of bed in the morning, complaining that she had a sore back, a persistent sore back, which I suppose I think is a sign of pancreatic cancer. Apparently it's it manifests as a pain in the back that won't go away. So just things like that, and saying that she's not feeling well. But that is it, realistically. I couldn't tell you any earlier than Christmas.
Yeah, there's no rapid weight loss.
No rapid weight loss, none of those classic indicators. And I mean, the story that I tell people, it's the unbelievability of it. On Mother's Day, on the 30th of March, she and I were up in Belfast. We stayed in a hotel. We went, I had dinner, went to see a comedian, Catherine Ryan, in the waterfront. We had a life, and eight weeks later, I'm burying her.
Yeah, because it was a sudden death.
Sudden death.
And we don't necessarily associate that with cancer. Unfortunately, though, I'm hearing more and more instances.
Explosive cancers, is what they're sort
especially
of.
Especially in women of a certain age where it by the time, you know, it's there, it's got to the point where it can't be held back.
Yeah.
So, I mean, when you're dealing with something like this, you're dealing with, you know, your wife's situation and the reality she must face. Your own Stephen, what your life will become.
Yeah.
And you've got three children. 21, 11, and nine.
Sophie, the baby, she's 9, yeah.
I mean, there's so much there, isn't it, to sort of deal with for you?
Well, that's it exactly. And I mean, I remember the story's sort of extraordinary. We were in oncology, and there was two wards. She was in an A&E, in the hospital, oncology, and she was in medical two or medical three again. Then there was nurses. They're great. They're great people. But she was told, based on one scan, that there might be a surgical option. So that basically, if they can treat what were at that time spots on her lungs or mets, that they could go in and surgically remove the pancreas. And that was fine. And I went back to work on the Tuesday morning. We were told that on a Monday. And I went back to work on a Tuesday morning and thought, I'm in for a year. We're in for a year of of chemo and whatever else, but we'll get through it. We'll beat it. And basically, she was told on the Tuesday that no, based on a scan that was done in the interim time, that the cancer had more or less consumed her lungs, and that she had 3 to 4 weeks to live, and any chemo that they can offer might buy her a week, but any quality of life that she might have in those 4 to 5 weeks would be gone.
What a cold half to
make. Yeah, and she sat with that knowledge and knowing that she's going to die in a month, basically. And I don't know where she got the strength out of it. I couldn't do it.
And, you know, like, there's other stuff that goes on that we don't necessarily consider unless you've gone through that, like the conversations.
Mm-hmm.
To be able to... we all going to die, right?
Of course.
Yeah. But to be able to know that it's coming and to... I don't know, give you instructions about the kids
Something clicked in her.
Discuss about what happens after you pass away.
Yeah.
I understand she kept a diary. Can you even face that at this point?
I've read a bit of it. A lot of it can't. She wrote me a letter because we didn't even say goodbye. That's the reality. But how do you say goodbye to somebody that you've been with for 23 years and you've built a life with and you've all these, you know, you're so connected that, and plus no time. Like, literally, you know, and I was in a state of shock. I didn't know what was going on, and you're running around. And funny, one of the things that clicked with her, once she knew what was happening, Sophie's communion was the highly motivating factor in her. She was, the hook or by crook, she was getting to this event. And she was wheeled into our house on the 24th of May in a wheelchair with an oxygen tank at 45 years of age. And
was that her last time?
That was her last time in our house, yeah.
And it's funny, was there an awareness
there? Oh, though, of course she knew that. And I see it now looking at photographs of the day. She's looking at Sophie, you know, and she's looking around her, and you can see it in her face. She knows it's the last time she's going to be in our home. And I don't know how a person copes with that. I don't know. She was strong. She was that type of individual. She was very strong, highly independent, well-educated, intelligent lady, and she just got strength out of somewhere to do what she did.
I've been asked, it seems like I've had to ask this question on multiple occasions to different people. You have to be strong yourself, you have to be strong for yourself, you have to be strong for your children, and I presume you feel you owe your wife to be strong as well, right?
Yeah, so, yeah.
But what
look after my kids is what she said to me. No, not look after our kids, look after my kids. Yeah, so.
I know, I hear that a bit myself too. So yeah. What keeps you
the
keeps
children
you keeping.
It's funny, I would have judged people not knowing what the hell I was talking about, the way some people deal with grief, and people can fall apart, and you know, the impulse to just let it all just don't worry about anything, and just let it just sort of basically go tick to the bed and pull the covers over your head and not let the world in. And I shouldn't have, because I didn't know what the hell I was talking about, because that impulse is there. But I have too many people depending on me.
Do people say to you it hasn't hit you yet?
It hasn't hit me yet, and it's funny.
But it might not hit you, you see.
No.
People say that, and I think they think they're being constructive or what have you, but everyone deals with grief
differently.
Mm-hmm. And the hitting you is the reality. You know what's happened, right? And you know what you have to do.
Yeah.
And that's it. I just think sometimes people say that to people, and it's meant nicely, right? Oh, but it doesn't tell the full story.
Not at all. And one thing that this has shown me is, I don't particularly show my emotions to people or talk in them ways. But people are genuinely very good. They might say things that are maybe a wee bit silly or perceived as, but it's all coming from a place of
care,
good in the heart,
course,
and care,
yeah.
And everybody. And that's the thing about a tragedy like this. It shows you within the community how good people are. I mean, with friends of our children's mothers phoning me and saying, "Can I do anything for you? Do you need these things done?" I'm a very domesticated person. I didn't either, but they were basically offering to come in and, you know, change beds and cook dinners and these type of things for me. And it really shows you how good people are behind it all.
You're an old romantic at heart, or is that just something new?
I think that's something new, yeah.
Is it?
This is okay. Definitely a change in experience for me, yeah.
There's layers of meaning to this fundraiser.
There is, yeah. Well, it's been held in McGinley's on Sunday the 30th of November. And why McGinley's? Well, our first date was Dinner in the Yellow Pepper back in 2002, and then on to McGinley's. And sort of every date night after that, where we were still in Letterkenny, was a variation of that. It's just That's where we went. I always had to see a band. You see, that was the just irritator. But that she used to have to suffer. She got the meal and the wine, and I got to see a band. That was the trade off. And then we're up the back actually. So just people might think it's not in the bar. It's up in the back area, and we have a marquee erected, or we will have a marquee erected. And so there'll be plenty of space, and people don't have to sit and watch the bands all day. They can come down, and there's the open air, and Stephen and McGinley's is kindly putting on a barbecue for everybody. So, and then I'm back with the band that I was playing in when I met her, and then I'm playing with three bands that day.
You're so with Humble Earthworms.
I'm
now,
with Humble Earthworm. Yeah.
Right. Who were you with originally?
A band called the Barefoot Disciples.
Right. Okay.
And that's how I met her. We were playing up in Keeney's Bar in Glendies, and she was working as a waitress up in Keeney's Bar, so that's how
I think you've almost written a song there.
That's how I met her, and that was it. I mean, you meet a person by chance playing in a bar. She's waitressing, I'm drumming, and 23 years later, you're still together. Yeah, and you know,
and there's even a significance to the fact that that band you were with her there as well. I would say the people in the industry, it's a small enough family, isn't it, right?
Oh, yeah, particularly
They've really rallied behind this with
you.
Yeah,
well, between all the boys that are playing, they are connected to us. So of the seven bands playing, I've either played in them, or they're friends of ours or people that are involved, and they're all donating their time for free. And Darren McGee's providing of audio rent is providing sound and light on the day, and Reynolds and Foe, who I worked for a very long time, are providing staging and various bits and pieces. So again, everybody's great.
It's to honour your wife as much as well as raising money for the hospice.
Yeah.
Do you feel it's like that?
Of course, yeah, because all her work colleagues, because she had a great career, and she had a load of work colleagues and friends. They weren't even colleagues; a lot of them were genuine friends. And she was a very social person. She had a large extended friend group, and I'm actually getting concerned that the venue might be too small, but we'll see on the day. But
well, they haven't fully taken that tent down yet.
No, exactly, out there. And again, all us, we're all in our mid-40s now, or most of us are in our mid-40s, so bedtime is unfortunately 9 o'clock, so I can't imagine filter out around a half 8.
But listen, you've done as much as you can to insulate yourself from the weather and all. It's going to be a cracking day. It's in McGinley's Bar, we're at the back of it on Sunday the 30th of November. There's the cream of the cream of bands there, and a barbecue as well. And the mood, is it... obviously you're reflecting, right? But you can also have to continue to honour your wife. You want to have a good day.
I want people to have a good day and talk about her. And I know her friend Ali and Sandra, they're putting together almost a shrine of
like
photographs and things, and get everybody talking about you.
Yeah.
That won't be a problem. The people that are there, they're going to enjoy it. I know it'll be a great day. And the hospice, just to talk about the hospice, if I may, because...
This is your time, so take
They are... What they did for us in those 14 or 15 days that she was in the hospice, like organising a movie night for me and the kids, and that was the last night that obviously my eldest boy would have been in and out all the time, but that was the last night that me and Julie and Ethan, or Adam and Sophie, spent together as a family, and they organised that. They can't do enough for you. We actually got married in the hospice, because that's another long story. We were together 23 years, but we're engaged since 2014. We never got around to doing it because of pregnancies and people being to college and different things.
And
life
stuff,
just got in the way. And we got married on Monday the 19th of May in the hospice. And again, they decorated a room and they couldn't have done enough for us. So the funds that are raised, as I understand it, the funds that are raised for this go to all those niceties the families get.
It's astonishing what they've contributed, isn't it, between that last night together as a family, facilitating the big day. I mean, that's not in the title.
Not at all. No,
that comes from the heart within that organisation.
That's all extras. And those nurses and the staff up there, the catering staff and management, they couldn't do enough. They're in fluffing, already fluff pillows. They just can't do enough for you. And really, that's a great cause. And it's a place I hope I never see the inside of again, or I don't see the inside of it for a long time.
Yeah.
But we're better looking at it than for it. There's no
I know exactly
it.
What you mean by that. So, folks... We want to make sure that the venue's too wee.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
It's
busting out the door.
It's on Sunday the 30th of November. It's at McGinley's Bar, and it starts at 4 p.m.
Doors open 3. 3-ish.
So
feel free to come on.
And it's going to be a fantastic day of music, of food, of conversation, of memories, of support.
Yep.
And everything as well. So it's just roll up on the day. That's it, isn't
that's
it?
That's it. So and there's a, if you go, if you're on Facebook, go to, if you put in Julie McCormick Devenny Memorial Fundraiser into Facebook, the event should come up. You'll see Julie's beautiful face as a picture, and there's an I donate link and there's a QR code there. So basically, just if you if people wanted to go onto the site and donate, and it goes straight to the hospice.
Even if you can't get along effectively.
Even if you can't
well,
get along, yeah, exactly, please sure. donate. Yeah.
Okay, listen, Stephen, I suppose to. I was going to say we need to sort of look out, you know, get everything checked, but yeah. that doesn't, it doesn't mean anything in your, because your wife knew the story, right? And there was nothing could have indicated the severity of her illness, but you know, we can't say go to the doctor immediately, you've got a sore back or what have you, but
no,
trust
but
yourself.
I suppose what my thing was, Julie being mommy and being that type of, you know, she put everybody else's needs first, and she's constantly was at me about, you know, my health or whatever, the child's health, the children's health. Whereas she might, you know, get your bloods done. I couldn't tell you the last time she got them done independently of being in hospital, you know, for those occasions that she was in hospital. So, like, I don't know if it would have made a difference, but perhaps if she'd have been getting regular blood tests, we might have got
or
to
it
sooner.
Might make a difference to someone
to someone else, yeah, exactly right. Exactly, just, yeah. I mean, particularly at our age now, you just... It's far too prevalent, and if the markers show up on a blood test, at least you have some kind of fighting chance. Because
exactly.
by the time it got to her, she had no chance of fighting it, and I literally told her that it consumed her lungs.
Unbelievable.
Unbelievable, yeah.
Listen, Stephen, well done. You're doing her proud. You're doing your family proud as well. And, you know, it's for the Donegal Hospice,
yeah.
and none of us can do enough for them.
No.
And as you so rightly put it, you don't want to be in the doors, but you want it to be there
yeah.
if you ever need it.
If you ever need it.
Stephen, thanks for being so open and sharing the story. But it's a lovely opportunity to remember your wife and the amazing woman she is as well, too.
Yeah,
and people shouldn't be afraid of that, I don't
no,
think.
Exactly, and I'll never forget her. Yeah. You know, it's just, that's there was a great, funny, I was at a funeral or a wedding, and it was a civil ceremony, much like ours, and there was a, one of the readings was about two trees that become so intertwined that and the roots, once you cut away the branches, they're one tree. And that's, I found that very profound on the day, because that is what happens. You two people spend a life together, they grow together, and there's no separating it.
Yeah, lovely. Okay, and a very nice sentiment to leave it on. Stephen Devenny, thank you very, very much indeed.
Greg, thank you.
Appreciate it. And just to let you know that fundraiser, and you know what? Forget the fact that it's a fundraiser. Go along and enjoy it and throw a few quid in to the buckets or whatever. It's going to be a fantastic day of entertainment. It's in McGinley's Bar, Letterkenny. It's on Sunday, the 30th of November. The event gets underway at 4 p.m. Doors open 3-ish, okay? And they've got a marquee out the back. There's going to be a barbecue. And you can check out, by the way, Julie McCormick Devenny Fundraiser on socials. And you can donate now to the hospice in her memory and to support Stephen, even if you can't get to that event. Okay, listen, we'll be back with more on the 9 till noon show after we take this break. We are broadcasting live from Ungreanon Theatre. It's part of the Donegal Giving event. They've had the first session, and they've broken for some tea and a scone, and they are starting to get back into the theatre itself very, very shortly. Now, Paul Anderson is Youth Information Officer with the Donegal Youth Service. Good morning to you. Talk to me about the Youth Employability Cafe pilot.
I've been working on a program called Targeted Youth Employability Support Initiative for the past year, and we have had a number of young people that have gone through that. Some of them have got jobs, some of them have went on to third level education and various things, but we also get young people who just want to come in and they just want a taster from it, support with CVs or interview skills, anything to do with employability, and just had the idea that maybe once a month, this is the pilot, where they could just drop in and get an update and talk to other young people and ourselves, myself and Kasia, who's the Youth Information Centre officer, to get support in an informal casual environment, which the loft is in Donegal Youth Service, just above the TB there in Port Road.
You've had your first session, have you?
No, tomorrow's the first session, and it's open to anyone who is aged between 15 and 24 who's not in education or employment or training. And the idea is to get them on that career pathway.
And we're trying to reach people today, I suppose, so that they will attend. So if people are hearing this for the first time, they can go along?
Oh, yeah, of course. And one of the great things that we find is that it can change people's lives, improve their mental health and their wellness. So it fits in exactly with what you're doing today.
Yeah, I was going to say that. It is almost by coincidence, isn't it? But you could be here today. It's that type of an event.
Yeah, unfortunately, I had other things to do.
Well, no, I was not calling you out, my friend. But I'm just saying it's all part of the same sort of ethos, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right, Greg. Thank you.
Okay, just recap then. Where is it? When is it? And who are you inviting to attend?
Okay, it's on tomorrow morning from 9:30 to 12 o'clock in the loft, which is at Donegal Youth Service on the Port Road, Letterkenny, across the road from where the grill was. It's on the fourth floor, just above the ETB. And any young person who is aged between 15 and 24 who wants help with their CV, interview skills, how to find what kind of career might be of help, might fit into what they need, and that any kind of questions or queries can drop in. They can also meet other young people who've been through TICE who might have some tips and ideas that could help them as well.
Great stuff. Listen, thank you so much for your time. I really do appreciate it. And that was Paul Anderson there. 086 60 25 000 is the WhatsApp and text number. 086 60 25 000. If you prefer, you can give us a call on 074 91 25 000. Now, of course, tomorrow we are back in our studio, and if you want, I'm sorry, it's Friday, so what we're kicking off with, of course, is the Friday panel with the usual mix of guests discussing all the big stories of the week and the day. We'd love for you to be a part of that, and we've got so much more coming up on that day as well. Let me see. Hi, Greg. Do you know if the breakdown of tallies by polling station for recent presidential election are available anywhere? In the past, they were published in local newspapers. Well, I'm not sure if you can still access it, but the Tyrconnell Tribune did a centre pullout. I'm not saying other papers didn't, but the Tyrconnell Tribune did a centre pullout with all of those details. That would have been not last week, the week before's copy. So maybe call their office or try and grab yourself a copy. Hi, could you wish a big happy 18th birthday to our daughter Maeve, who is sitting at the kitchen table in County Cavan on a study day for her leaving cert, listening to Greg in the background. Where have those years gone? Lots of love from Mum, Dad, Ronan, Sinead and Sinead McClune. Well, listen, I'll take anyone listening to the show, whether they're in Cavan, Donegal, Galway, wherever they are. Maeve, a very happy 18th birthday, and it's great to hear that you're staying up to date with everything that's happening at home with us here on the 9 till noon show. Right, we have plenty more guests to introduce to you over the course of the next half an hour. We've even got some live music for you, if you don't mind. That's all on the way after we take a short break. Okay, you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show, live from Ungreen on Theatre. Today we're joined on the programme now by Marie Fury of Marie Fury Counselling. Good morning to you, Marie. Thank you so much for your time today.
Hi, Greg. How are you? Thank you for having me on.
Now, this is in the context of a workshop on navigating through the justice journey after a road traffic collision. So I suppose, you know, speaking from sort of experience and knowledge in this area, what issues are we addressing in this process?
Well, I thought it was very important to take this workshop into Donegal, because I suppose when you're pushed into this journey in life, there's a lot of questions and queries, and like, it can be really, really traumatizing for families. So I just thought it would be good to take this workshop to support families that are navigating through the legal processes. So I actually have two solicitors coming on this evening, one from North and one from South, and they're going to work through like a few of the legal processes, and if any families have any queries on, say, like in the inquest or cases, it's just basically like a safe space for people to come and just navigate through it together.
It's one of those situations, isn't it, that we hope we never have to go through, but inevitably some of us will. So we can't sort of bury our head and pretend it might not be relevant. So what happens, or what can happen following a fatal road traffic collision that will be covered this evening? Stuff that maybe people who aren't aware may not be aware.
Well, one of the big questions that comes across, and a few families have come to us, so, and I have actually experienced it as well. So, say, like, in an inquest, like, do families have a formal right to leave the courtroom before graphic or distressing material is shown? Or sometimes families don't want to hear that. They can't process to hear it. So they can leave the courtroom, and a lot of people don't know that they can. So that's why I have the solicitors coming to explain a few things about that as well.
Yeah, because of course, you know, you've mentioned the inquest there. There may be a court case. It might give rise to a civil claim. Or indeed, you know, where do you stand, or how do you navigate if there are criminal proceedings for that matter?
Yes. Again, that's exactly why I have these solicitors coming this evening, because, again, it's a learning process for me as well, you know, because, and there's families coming on tonight that have been through this experience, so at least everybody can share, like, what they have gone through and what can be done and et cetera.
Very sadly, you have been through this. You lost your partner, Jonathan Trainer. He was just 28 when a spin on a motorcycle effectively turned into tragedy. You could never have accounted, could you, for A, happening, B, trying to process that grief, but then this extra layer of stuff that hits you just when you need it the least, the type of stuff that we've been talking about and that will be covered tonight.
Yeah, so like when a collision happens, you know, families and like myself have been thrust into a world that they never had to deal with before. They don't know what's happening. And like when you lose someone, like life is just so difficult anyway. And then when you have all these layers, it can be so distressing, re-traumatizing. And again, like, grief never goes away. You do learn to carry it with you throughout your life in different ways. And, so hopefully, like, this evening, like, we can discuss, you know, all those extra layers that you have upon your life when you lose someone. And that'll be, as you said, the inquests, investigations, court procedures, statements, timelines. You know, there's all these different timelines too that you're not aware of, and that's where the solicitors come into effect, that they can guide you on that.
Obviously, you've made it very accessible. It is this evening, and whilst that might seem like short notice, it's remote, okay? So whether you're listening to us in Northern Ireland, in the Republic of Ireland, you can get access to this. Marie, Who do you expect to log in? Is it the recently bereaved? Would people log in to sort of educate themselves, you know, on the off chance that, God forbid, something like that might happen to them? Who do you expect your guests to be tonight?
Yeah, anybody that has been affected by road traffic collisions. It doesn't have to be recent. It can be previous, or anybody that wants to gather more information around this topic. It's open to anybody throughout the public. It's free. Just give us a wee call or message through our social media. There's an email as well, or vsnid@outlook.com. Get us through the Facebook, and the Southern number is 083-1837-324. Just give me a wee message or a call, and I'll give whoever information and give you the Zoom link for tonight.
All right, so we'll try and get that information shared on our socials as well, just to link into your own. Marie, thanks so much for joining us and sharing that information with us. I do appreciate it, and I hope you're okay and able to deal with things as best you possibly can, given the difficult circumstances. I do appreciate your time.
And thank you so much, Greg, for having me on. I do appreciate it.
Okay, Marie Fury, who is of Marie Fury Counselling there. That is at 7 p.m. tonight. We'll try, Shannon, we'll get that stuff up on our socials, will we? Because you would know that off by heart, I would hope. Highland Radio, Highland Radio Hub, Highland Radio News and Sport, and so on and so forth. 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number, 086 60 25,000, or you can give us a call on 074 91 25,000. I'm joined here now by John Muldooney. Good morning, Muldowney, I beg your pardon. Good morning, John. How are you getting on?
Yes, Greg, how's the form?
Wow, I got the mouth mic. Guessed it first time. How are you keeping?
I'm not so bad, eh?
But you're flat out. You're always playing someplace or other, aren't you?
Bits and pieces, eh?
Yeah.
You know, there's bits of me falling off every day, so...
You're still here,
hobbling here, you know.
Still here. I'll tell you, I never realised how low this couch was until I tried to stand up.
Oh, I know that feeling. I'm glad I've got a high chair here. Otherwise, you'd need a crane to get me up.
Come here, where are you playing this weather?
Been playing a call around the place, really. Myself and Fanny Donnell are out.
You've got a wee twosome going now. It's going well for you.
Going well, aye. We're all right, aye. We're not too bad. We're getting away.
Exactly.
We're getting away with it, aye. The hoor and the hallion.
Very good. Who's the hallion?
That's the question, you see. we're always asked that, aye. That's going to be a big bone of contention, fairness.
All right, come here. You'll sing a couple for us, will you?
Ah, well, sure.
All right,
yeah.
Well, we'll have a chat. What are you going to sing for us first, after we hear something from you?
Aye. Well, I know there's a Donegal Giving kind of a theme
right
here.
Yeah.
And also, yesterday was the fifth anniversary of a good friend of ours, Andrew Early from Aranmore, and Andrew's son, Jerry, and his cousin, John Gallagher, wrote a great song about a heroic action that happened back 85 years ago in Aranmore, and I think it's as good an example of the Donegal spirit of caring for each other, you get. It's called I'll Go. And funnily enough, about 10 years ago, I was on Highland Radio singing the same thing with Jerry.
There you go. So, okay, yeah. It's very fitting, so.
Yeah. Not tonight of any night, said the coxswain of the crew. The chances of survival on a night like this are few. December 1940, the coast of Donegal, came a great north wind that could have been the cruelest of them all. 14 men were missing, 18 more in great distress. Jack Boyle had their future in his hands had come to rest. He knew a man who knew the sea, if any man would know. Will you show the way without delay? O'Donnell said, I'll go. I'll go and do the best I can. I'll do what must be done. I'll go cause I'm a lifeboatman. I am my father's son. I will go and do the best I can. I'll do what must be done. I'll go cause I'm an island man. I am my father's son. Their neighbours watched them gather and they cast a worried eye. And they wondered how this lifeboat crew could possibly survive. They all agreed that some at least the greatest price pay. And the old men shed a tear and knelt down on the ground to pray. While Camden on the pier with his handpick squad of men, Jack told each one there'd be no shame if this time I said no.
Each trace to cross upon his brow and sitting in cold. Each trace to cross upon his brow and said I go. I'll go and do the best I can, I'll do what must be done. I'll go cause I'm a lifeboat man, I am my father's son. I will go and do the best I can, I'll do what must be done. I'll go cause I'm an island man, I am my father's son. Against the storm, against the gale, against the mighty wave, these men were rightly honored as the bravest of the brave. And let us all salute them and thank God for men like these who would risk their lives for strangers in peril on the seas. O'Donnell, Ward and Gallagher, remember these names well. With the Boyles, the Burns and Rogers, they faced the seas from hell. With the waves above them crashing down and the heaving mass below, God bless them, every one who made the vow to say I'll go. I'll go and do the best I can, I'll do what must be done. I'll go cause I'm a lifeboat man, I am my father's son. I will go and do the best I can, I'll do what must be done. I'll go cause I'm an island man, I am my father's son. This volunteer lifeboat crew, sullen or more, they faced the greatest storm they hadn't ever seen before. But they brought those 18 sailors home and they left them on the land. Now they're safe and well and home again by the grace of God's own hand. Now their spirits soar upon the waves of barren eternal rest. And surely if there's justice, they are seated with the best. I'd like to think in at last our God whispered soft and low and welcomed home the 8 brave men who made the vow to go. I'll go and do the best I can, I'll do what must be done. I'll go cause I'm an island man, I am my father's son. I will go and do the best I can, I'll do what must be done. I'll go cause I'm from Aranmore, I am my father's son. Yes, I'll go cause I'm from Aranmore, I am my father's son.
Well done, John Muldowney. It's kind of a kind of an exclusive club, that song, I think, in that it's not often relatively new songs or new songs become part of the sort of, you know, the musical fabric of the county. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, that has. Some come and go, right?
I had a wee brain fart in the middle of it there. I'm sorry about that. But, it is. It's definitely a song that's going to just come into the tradition.
That's what I'm saying, yeah. Because it's part of it now, isn't it?
It is, absolutely. And, you know, again, it's kind of like Donegal Danny or any of those songs that have a true story behind them,
that's,
you know.
There's an authenticity there, isn't
absolutely,
it?
Absolutely,
yeah. It tells a real story. Stay where you are. I'm going to take a break. John Muldowney's going to play another one for us because he got up those stairs. It wouldn't be fair just to get two out of him, to get one out of him. Right, so we'll be back with more music and conversation in the last part of today's 9 till noon show after these. We're wrapping things up here. We've got another song to come to play us out from the excellent John Muldowney. But first, I want to have a quick chat, if that's okay, with Marie Shields of ETB Donegal, but also an ambassador of Donegal Giving Online. Why, Marie, good morning to you. Why did you decide to get involved in this project?
So the founder of Donegal Giving, Evelyn McGlynn, is a longtime friend and collaborator of mine. So she had kindly shared this concept with me a while back. And she has a tendency to get you very excited about anything she works on. And I loved the concept. And so, yeah, I came on board as one of the friends of Donegal Giving just to lend any kind of moral support, online support, anything at all I could do. I thought it sounded great. And yeah, it's great to see such a brilliant turnout today.
What do you think this will become? Because it is concept, it's a framework. There's, you know, it's there to grow into something.
Yeah. A proof of concept is certainly here today, given the volume of the people who are under one roof. And one of the things that I hope to see is a stronger connection between all of the different agencies, charities, people, schools. It's hard to connect everybody in Donegal, but this is kind of a North Star where everybody wants to give
it's
or provide something.
It's interesting you say that, because I've seen a lot of the people here at different events over the years, but I haven't seen all of them at the same events.
Yeah,
but it's logical that they would. I'm not saying they don't work together outside of these events, don't get me wrong, but it is logical to get them into the same building.
Yeah, it provides an opportunity.
Networking word is it's not just a word, it's a significant part of anything, really.
No, it's great. And even my colleagues here from Donegal ETB Adult Guidance have a stand where they're doing a bit of signposting and support. And they were saying it was great for them to talk to the other stand holders from the nonprofit community who they may not have had a chance to network with or speak to. So that sense of connectivity and relationship building, I think, is something that will help it in the future if everyone, you know, maintains those relationships.
Yeah, and it's the buy-in too. You know, there's not a direct commercial advantage in it. So people are doing this, people are giving of their time. Caroline and Sylvester in there. Is it Caroline? It is.
Yeah.
Caroline and Sylvester in there. Sorry, and Richard, and Evelyn and yourself and Una Quinn. Do you know what I mean? As I say, this is not a business where everyone's making money. This is a concept that people see the benefit of for themselves and for others.
Yeah, definitely. There's that kind of feel-good factor and fulfillment today. There's no huge KPI or goal or commercial element. It's just about what can we do to help.
There was some jargon in there, but I think you did very well, Marie, for speaking in layman's terms to me, because I'm a layman. I've heard a bit of jargon today and I'm learning all the time. KPIs, key performance indicators?
Yes,
excellent.
Correct.
Okay, I'm sure you're smashing all of yours. I have no doubt about it. Listen, thanks, Marie.
You're
really
very welcome. Thank you very
much. That's Marie Shields there with ETB Donegal, but also an ambassador of Donegal Giving, another person, a powerful person in Donegal that's bought into this. Right, now, John Muldowney, where are you playing this weekend? You know, plug yourself. Not that you need to, right? You're not going to be one of these musicians that doesn't know because you haven't been told yet because it's not Friday.
We're in the Central in Lifford on Sunday.
Lovely, good spot that.
Yeah, first time.
Right.
First time there.
I think I DJed there at an 18th birthday party about 30 years ago.
Yeah.
I wonder, is it the same place?
Maybe, I don't know.
Right, okay.
I've been kind of hobbling.
You have to climb a ladder into the DJ box. It might not be
crikey.
The same place, I know.
I've had to cancel a few because I've got a dodgy leg. But anyway.
Right. Okay, so what are you going to play us out with?
I'm going to play a song from a singing of a man called Chris Wood. He's an English folk singer who's played here, actually. Lovely man. It's called The Cottager's Reply.
£500,000 English pounds for this own house and a piece of ground. You and your wife, you've always planned to settle down in Cotswold land. Well, you best come in, you best sit down. Such a long drive from London town. Would you like some tea while I tell the reason why I will not sell? This stone-built house that you call nice was gained at far too high a price for me to gaily sign away what others toiled for night and day. They hammered bluestone by the yard and they found the rent when times were hard. and they lived and died beneath the sun, gazing on the fields you've won. Now they're all gone, but as for me, though I'm here, still roams as free. And at dusk the badger travels still, ancestral highways on the hill. I am as Cotswold bred as these, and I still need these fields and trees. And I need the soil that bore my race and holds their bones beneath this place. You say you'll pay 500 grand for this old house and a piece of land. Well, London's about 4 hours from me, but in a car like that, you'll do it in 3.
Excellent stuff, John. That was wonderful. Thank you so very much indeed. That's where we leave it on the programme today. Thanks to Joe Dex, who looked after us technically. Caroline Orr, of course, Shannon Wilkins. We're back in studio tomorrow from 9. Look forward to chatting to you then.